A rally calling for more education reform. Will lawmakers listen? The governor of Ohio trash talks Indiana, plans to renovate the Indiana House Chamber, and Richard Murdoch invests in Israel. That plus the governor's pay, high marks for the Indianapolis airport, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 15, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, thousands of people converged on the State House demanding more education reform. Parents and students came promoting charter schools, online classes, homeschooling, and the school voucher program. Organizers say they need quality teachers, empowered parents, and effective schools and choices. Former Pacers star Jalen Rose joined the governor on stage.
And we all know that certain districts get more money based on the per capita income of the people that live there, and I don't think that's fair to the young men and young women who really had nothing to do with that.
We know we have made progress, but for the sake of our kids, we are going to demand great schools in every community serving every child in the state of Indiana.
Will the education rally lead to more reform? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, why did education reform prompt the biggest rally of the year?
It was cold outside and people needed something to do. I don't know. But you know, what's amazing about this is, you know, you say it's education reform. It started out to say that we had to save poor kids from who are failing in failing schools, okay? Now, you don't have to be in poverty to qualify for vouchers. You don't have to be in a failing school, and you don't have to be failing. So what's wrong with this picture? And I'm glad Jalen Rose is taking an interest in education, but somebody ought to acquaint him with the facts. Because you don't have, if you're in a well-to-do school district, your facility may be better, your buses may be better, but the amount of allocated school dollars is the same. Okay, they don't get more money to educate the students. So all the fundamental assumptions of this, quote, reform process are not right.
There is a bill to expand the voucher system. I mean, there's legislation moving that mirrors most of what they're asking for. Why is a rally necessary?
Just show support and how fast these programs have grown. I think that it was clearly the biggest crowd of the year in the State House, a very loud crowd, and they were really into it, the parents and students. And it was great to see Jalen there, because Jalen is not a guy that just talks about it. He does something about it. He actually started a charter school in Michigan, and he is trying to head the effort to start a voucher program in Michigan patterned after the Indiana program. And so he's a believer, and he knows what he talks about from the standpoint that he has actually taken the time to begin a charter school himself. So it was great. It was great to see him and the enthusiasm for it. And believe me when I tell you that, yes, there is going to be more education reform. I think what you'll see is an expansion of the programs we already have, because they've taken off so rapidly that they're going to continue to grow.
Mike Pence was a headliner along with Jalen Rose. He's for the voucher expansion and for more school choice. Is he pushing this, or is he just riding along?
Maybe a little of both. I mean, it's an issue. I don't think he's new to this position. This is a cause that he has supported, I think, when he was on Capitol Hill, obviously not as heavily involved directly in local schools at the federal level, but I think this is philosophically where he has been before. But he made the comment this week about, you know, suggesting it was still one reason that we need reform is that 200,000 school kids in Indiana are attending schools, public schools, that are rated or graded D and F. And this gets maybe to something Ann was saying. There may be more enthusiasm if, in fact, you would say, okay, these 200,000 students that are in D and F schools, that may be, if that's where the eligibility window, as it is in some other states, that might be a trigger that that critics might find more palatable. But as Ann suggested, the fact that Indiana's program, the reason Indiana's program is enacted in 2011 is different is because there aren't those thresholds. And so you can go to the, you know, the school that's theoretically rated the best in the on the planet
and be
at the top of your class and still go.
And
so that's why it's
right.
And for this to go too far, though, Dennis Cruz, who's the chairman of Senate Education Committee, is going to have to maybe back away from some things he said earlier in the session, which, I mean, he basically was implying, or at least I inferred, that he wanted to give what's there now an opportunity to be tested and to see how it goes. He didn't seem that he was crazed
for a moratorium, as it were. Okay. Part of the lesson here, is it not, John, that education's big business?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Education's big business on a couple of fronts. One, if you think about what the state's enterprise is, what Indiana does as an organization, if you will, it's educate its citizens. 52% of every dollar that the state spends goes to K-12 education. You put higher ed into that, and you're looking at nearly two-thirds of every dollar being spent on education. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is that it is big business now to run these charter schools, and Indiana has seen the influx
the
of a lot of these
schools.
Companies. Well, right, the private schools, the charter schools,
but
that's where
they
voucher
still can use income.
Right, that's where the voucher program becomes especially critical, because it's not just charter schools, it's private schools as well. So this has become big business on both fronts.
And we don't yet know whether going to that model of vouchers and charter schools has improved performance.
That's right.
And, you know, you'd think we'd want to have a measure, if you're going to be fiscally responsible, as to whether those dollars are being well spent. And the other problem I have with that is they are not required to take students who apply if the students are handicapped, either physically or mentally. And that's a complete disservice to that part of the community, because they may have the vouchers and nowhere to go but a, quote, failing public school.
There's no question that the more competition that we have for attention and providing excellent education for students is helping all schools work at their game, and everybody is. You're seeing public schools of all sorts now trying to do things that they've never done before to be more competitive and to be as good as they can possibly be, and that's a good thing. And that competition is working for the state of Indiana.
Well, we have to be able to measure that objectively.
I concur with that.
All right.
I have no problem
good.
With that.
I do think that's where there are pushbacks.
But would you agree that we see things now, for instance, in Indianapolis public schools that they've never done before, because they know that they have to compete,
right?
And they're doing things,
and
that's a good thing.
But I want to see the test scores go up as
well. I think that's where you see some pushback, though. We haven't seen it yet because these new rules haven't really been in place long enough. It used to be that the failing schools, the inner city schools, that didn't have a loud voice. They didn't have the ear of lawmakers in many cases, were the ones who were affected. When this continues to pull students away from suburban and rural schools across the state, that's when I think some lawmakers' phones might start ringing, and they'll say, are you taking people out of our...
You just underline the stereotype that they're all urban schools that are having
trouble.
I'm saying now that they're not.
When the pushback or the backlash comes
urban
from...
Urban and rural for the
right.
most part.
But IPS has a disproportionate number of kids with disabilities. I mean, and you have people from the suburban schools moving into IPS to get that education.
Moving on. Ohio Governor John Kasich dissed Indiana this week. He thinks Cincinnati is, quote, a cool happening place, and that Ohio can be the best state in the country. He says Ohio is not Indiana, where once someone goes to Indianapolis, they'd wonder where else to go. Kasich asked Gary. Kasich earlier used a similar line in a New York Times story. That time, instead of Gary, he threw up his hands and asked Terre Haute. Mike McDaniel, how do you explain that trash talk?
Well, clearly Kasich's a guy that's trying to copy as much of Indiana as he can. He's already talking about doing a lot of the things that we've done to make his budget look anywhere near similar to ours. And they're still fighting on jobs that they're losing to Indiana. the very week that he made these comments, a Cincinnati truck company moved 300 jobs from Cincinnati across the border to Indiana because the tax climate here is better. And now this is
the
same.
They didn't move to Gary, did they?
This is the same guy, though, that was touting Mitch Daniels when Mitch Daniels was governor, having Mitch come to Ohio to talk to them about how they can make Ohio like Indiana. So it's funny to me that Kasich's out doing this, and I think most people laugh it off.
Speaking of Mitch Daniels, he used to talk about other states much like
this. Well, sure. Sure.
Yes, you know.
And we're still getting jobs from all our border states.
It's all the rah-rah stuff. But, you know, I'll concede that Indiana is not Ohio. At least, as far as I know, the Wabash has never caught on fire. And, you know, it looks like you can see
Amen.
Lake Michigan through the algae.
Amen.
Unlike Lake Erie. So, you know.
I'm
I don't
with
know,
you on
the,
that
the highlights of Toledo and Cleveland, I think, are lost on me. Sorry.
Well, I mean, this is about, I think this is about jobs competition.
Sure it is.
Do you think governors touting their states over other states makes a difference if you're looking to move a company?
It may make a difference running for president, so maybe he's already given up on that.
Okay. Well, let's just say that Governor Kasich's not exactly a trash talker on league with, say, Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan or anybody like that.
Yeah.
You know, if that's the best hold he's got, to steal a phrase from Mike, then that's pretty weak. And you know, he's free to say whatever he wants, but he's going to get it back. And Governor Pence's response was, I think, indicative. And, you know, if he'd have picked West Virginia, he'd have gotten more of the same.
So, what do you like better, Indiana or Ohio?
Indiana. But now back in the I spent a good deal of time in both states. But the fact that my 16-year-old is hell-bent on going to IU, which is mom and dad's alma mater, should tell you something. The point is, this is kind of a throwback to a time when a politician could go and give a speech assuming that it was never going to be repeated anywhere else. So I could go to this county and diss the counties around. That's not the day anymore. Everything's
on
cell phone. It's on the internet. In fact, Kasich a few months ago was in hot water because he was giving his talk to some environmental state workers and talked about the idiot police officer who had stopped him. Guess what? Then you had the law enforcement community up in arms.
Yeah.
And then when he got into a wreck a few months later, and who showed up at the scene but the idiot police officer had stopped him, you got some comeuppance. So you got to be careful when you speak. Things get around.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is Ohio a cooler place than Indiana? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, Governor Kasich should really pick on West Virginia. Last week's question was, will you gamble at an Ohio casino? 11% said yes, 39% said no. 50% said, I don't gamble. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Money for renovation of the House chambers is still in the House budget proposal this week, but House Republicans are on the defensive. House staffers lowered the chandelier in the House chamber, the one with a light bulb for every one of the 100 members, to show how repairs are needed. The light fixture is held together in spots by zip ties. There are other problems that need to be addressed, ripped carpet, torn wallpaper, and such, prompting a new budget appropriation.
The repair and restorations were needed because of the wear and tear that normally occurs.
But this story has its roots elsewhere. After 24-Hour News 8 reported that State Superintendent Glenda Ritz spent $86,000 to build walls in her state house office, House Speaker Brian Bosma, a former employee of the Department of Education, was critical.
My office actually used to be in the area that was redone, and we seemed to be able to function okay in there for a couple of years without any issues.
At about the same time, Americans for Prosperity, a group with Tea Party ties, bought TV ads that pushed for the governor's tax cut while criticizing spending in the state budget. And that's also when copies of the budget with the line item for the house renovation highlighted were passed around the state house. John Ketzenberger, is that a political problem for House Republicans?
It's sort of like the previous question about Governor Kasich saying what he said and then having to eat his words later in the story that John responded to. I mean, if you're going to make a big deal out of the superintendent's problems or renovations, if you will, then you're going to get it back.
There is a difference here, though. She put up walls that didn't exist, and they're talking about maintaining.
Look, there may be a difference, but when you're talking about the political perception, the spin is going to make them on equal levels. I agree. I think it's better that we take care of the building and all the buildings as we go along and make sure that they stay in good shape. That's the problem with the politics.
I think, yeah, I remember what the, been around the State House long enough to remember what it looked like before the renovation in, when was it,
1988.
It was a dump.
Yeah,
I mean, it really was a dump, kind of an embarrassment for people who had come in there. And it was remade in its old glory and restored to its old glory. So I don't think anybody who's proud of the Indiana State House can begrudge certain maintenance. The problem here in terms of the optics and the framing of this is why there's the perception. I'm not saying they were trying to keep it a secret, but it certainly seems that way, because if you look at the line item in the budget, it was just this one word about renovation. Why, if you really want to stamp out, you know, tamp out any kind of concern or any kind of pushback, have a news conference, show the twist ties, that, as you pointed out in your piece, Jim, on the lights, show the tears in the carpet. Then Hoosiers say, yeah, we want to keep the state, the people's house in tip-top shape.
One person's need is another person's political issue in this environment.
Well, that's always the case. Look, anytime you put yourself out there and do something like this where you're talking about spending taxpayer money for renovating a facility, you put yourself at risk. I mean, that's always the case. And the question is, can you make the case? And does really anybody in the public care that much in this particular case? And the answer is no, they don't really care that much. But in the case of the House, I mean, clearly they need this renovation. And they're using surplus desk from thrown away from other agencies. That chandelier is literally being held together in part with plastic ties. I wouldn't sit under that chandelier, quite frankly. I've thought about that when I go in there. I wouldn't even let Ann sit under that chandelier.
Oh,
that's
my.
How bad it is. But I'd move if I were Ed. I tell you, I really would. I've looked at that thing, and it's a dangerous. But seriously, and look, now I didn't begrudge Glenda. I wasn't here the week you talked about that. That's his deal. If she wants to spend that money and make that argument, so be it. You know, I don't care. And it's one of those kinds of things where if it's necessary, go ahead. It is necessary in the House. Yeah. It may be necessary down there. We have a $2 billion surplus. If you're ever going to do it, now's the time to do it.
One of the things they're talking about is new chairs. They haven't had new chairs since 1985.
Well, they're also talking about doing the committee rooms, and the committee rooms are a disservice to the public who
want
to
exactly
come.
Right.
I don't begrudge it, and I didn't begrudge it for Glenda, because what she's doing is putting up walls to more effectively use space for her employees. So they ought to do both of them, and shame on the Republicans who made an issue of the 86 she spent as opposed to the $750,000.
Of course, the 86 is for two rooms.
Just remember, though, that all renovations are not equal. I think there are ways to repair torn carpet and fix bad wiring and all sorts of things in a respectable way. But when you do what it was a former Indiana prisons chief who in his official residence had the so-called gold faucets.
Did you ever go into that house?
Never was in the prison system as far as I
well,
know.
But the house that was lived in by the corrections commissioner who got run out didn't even have level floors.
But the point being, so why then put gold faucets?
The point is, it's all perception, it's not reality.
Right, but put in fine put in regular faucets, and everybody's happy.
We need to maintain the building, period.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
State Treasurer Richard Murdoch announced this week that he purchased $10 million worth of bonds issued by the State of Israel. The bonds were purchased by Murdoch in his official role using taxpayer money. Indiana now has $40 million invested in Israel bonds because Murdoch said, quote, we are supporting one of our biggest allies, which is critically important in these uncertain times. John Schwanes, does that suggest that Murdoch makes investments for political reasons?
Sounds like it.
Therefore, does that call into question back during the last campaign when he kept saying that he was doing the right thing by battling the Chrysler bankruptcy?
Well,
did he just give himself up?
Well, let's
yes.
If let's do this. Go back. Go back and look at Richard Murdoch's investment patterns. He has invested and lauded himself for the fact in Israeli bonds before. And in fact, if you look at some of the annual reports of the bond dealers or whatever you want to call them, he's pictured in some of them from a few years back as sort of this icon of. And back when he hit the $15 million threshold, he had a news release that said, you know, I've directed more money to these funds than anybody else in his history. And guess what? When you look at his campaign finance reports from his Senate campaign, there were a lot of the Israeli-focused PACs that gave money and were very open about the fact here's a champion of our cause.
So he recently said that,
I guess that's yes to your question.
I think that's a yes.
And
he recently said that he might consider running for office again. Is he laying the groundwork here?
In Israel or here?
maybe both.
You know, I think John's last point is most salient in this regard, and I think the answer is yes. He's leaving open his options to run for further office, and he sees this as a way to fulfill what he thinks is a good idea. I think it's a terrible way to invest. If you want to invest, invest on the business principles, not the political principles, and for the reasons that come back in terms of campaign contributions.
So does he have a political future?
In a word, no. No.
So that's two yeses and a no to your question, Jim.
No, I mean, does he think he has a political future? Yes.
Clearly.
Does he have a political future? No. So, I mean, you've got that. And, you know, these are probably a good investment, and that's fine. But he's not elected to conduct foreign policy for the state of Indiana.
If they're good investments,
he wanted to do
great.
That. That's right. But he wanted to do that. If he wanted to do that, he wanted to be in the Senate, and the people said no. So we ought to concentrate on investing those resources in the most effective way to bring back the return.
Is he preparing for another Senate run?
Oh, I don't know that he's preparing for another Senate run, but I would never say never for another political run for him. You know, I learned a long time ago you never say never in this business. But as far as the investments themselves, when I first heard about this, I thought, you know, why is he doing this? And then I started asking around and making some calls, and I'm told that these are pretty stable investments, and they probably make good sense, and they'll probably pay
but
off well
other
for the state.
Stable investments,
sure,
right?
I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you. It's not like
he's
throwing it away, but it's
hundreds of millions of dollars of investments on behalf of the state, and you don't see a press release for those.
No. Right.
Nor do you see the political contributions coming back either.
That's right.
Governor Mike Pence led a prayer breakfast at the Indiana Roof this week. Pence said that prayer comforts those who serve and strengthens the hands of laborers. He explained what it means to him.
You know, in my nearly 30 years of walking in my faith, I have often considered this question. Why prayer? Why is it so important? It is clearly, clearly a directive. We are to devote ourselves to prayer. We are to persevere in prayer. We are to approach the throne of grace with confidence.
Now, on an unrelated matter, we also learned this week that Mike Pence is the highest paid governor in Indiana history. Pence, who took, he is paid over $111,000, up from $97,000 earned by former governor Mike Pence, or Mitch Daniels, I'm sorry, who turned down a raise at the beginning of his second term. Ann Delaney, does he get paid enough?
Was he praying for a larger raise,
well,
or what was it?
It might be that.
To be fair, first of all, how old is he? How old is he?
I think he's in his early 50s.
So for 30 years, what was he doing for the first 25 or whatever? Okay, anyway, I don't think he's paid enough, frankly. I don't think $111,000, which is what a lot of very junior business types and lawyers coming out of school make, is sufficient. I think he ought to be compensated more.
And he took a big pay cut. Congress, you get paid 174, right?
He does get the house too, though. I mean, you know,
there's
and the
one
cars.
Thing,
there are perks.
Yeah.
Okay. There's one thing that Ann and I have agreed on through the years is that state elected officials
are not paid
do
enough.
Not get paid enough, period. It ought to be twice this amount. And because if you're trying to hire somebody to do the job that these people are supposed to do, if you're doing that in the private sector, you couldn't do it for three or four times this amount. And so it's just crazy that we do this and continue to do it. Finally, the legislature at least attached it to, of all things, pay raises for public employees, which means it's going to inch up only a few thousand dollars over the course of the next 50 years.
But it will go up. Instead,
it will go
and
up.
It will go up automatically.
At least it did this time. Now, in Mitch Daniels' case, because they were frozen, he didn't take it. After the legislature passed this.
Right.
He's taken up now.
But the increment, the increment was made up.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah. And then some.
I think they're both exactly right. Public service is one of the most honorable professions. It should be for the best and brightest, whether it's a judgeship or an elective office. I would double it. In some cases, triple it. Yeah, I would say exactly the same thing. Because you don't want people who either are independently wealthy, retired, or can't get a job, being the only people who run for office.
Or want this because they need a job.
Yeah,
you're right.
Pay raises for everybody, I say.
Finally, the Indianapolis International Airport won an honor this week. Best airport in North America. The honor comes from the group known as the Airports Council International. The group looked at which airports were the most passenger-friendly. The Indianapolis airport won the same honor in 2010. Some of the other top airports around the world are in Cape Town, Seoul, Moscow, Cancun, and Abu Dhabi. Mike McDaniel, what do you think? the governor of Ohio would say about that.
Well, I think he'd be jealous. I think he would be very jealous of that. I've been in Cleveland's airport, believe me. That is a trip in itself, but I thought I was in Russia somewhere. But anyway, it's just one of those things where these people work very hard to win this award. This airport now is 4.5 years old. This is a great honor, and they have worked very hard to do it, and it's because of attention to detail.
And kudos to Bart Peterson and John Kish for going ahead with this construction when they got a lot of criticism for it.
Gotta go. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.